Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes, indeed. Let's get started. Please welcome to the show this evening my special guest, Leslie Mitchell Clark.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Some of us have asked the question, have I been abducted? Is it possible that I could have an implant inside of me? Why do I seem to be having experiences that I simply cannot explain? Well, my guest this evening, Leslie Mitchell Clark, will be able to help answer those questions. Leslie Mitchell Clark is a Toronto-based, board-certified clinical master hypnotherapist regressionist who specializes in a number of modalities, including working with individuals who feel that they have had contact experiences with extraterrestrial, ultra-terrestrial beings. For the past 10 years, Leslie has been the host of a popular ufology-focused program which transformed and transitioned into Contact TV in the spring of 2016. Leslie has also written a book with Wes Roberts called Intersections, A True Story of Extraterrestrial Contact, and has been featured on the cover of the magazine Paranormal Underground in January of 2024. Leslie focuses her work on performing artists from all disciplines and has developed hypnosis protocols for dealing with artists' very specialized issues such as stage fright, creative blocks, memory enhancement, dealing with competition, and a variety of other topics. Leslie is a graduate from the University of South Dakota, earning a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree, and was a licensed psychiatric technician working at a number of mental health and addiction treatment facilities in the Los Angeles area. She has also earned NGH certifications in past life regression, interlife regression, and energy release, as well as pain management, addictions, and pediatric hypnosis. We had a lot to talk about this evening, so sit back and lay on a couch and grab yourself a pillow and a blanket as we go head on head with Leslie Mitchell Clark in her discussions regarding abductees, their experiences, what is real, what is not. Please welcome my special guest to the show this evening, Leslie Mitchell Clark. Well, good evening, Leslie, and thank you so very much for being on the show today.
Oh, Kelly, I am thrilled to be here and thrilled to be in touch with a fellow Minneapolisan.
Well, Leslie and I have a little bit in common, the Minneapolis thing, but, you know, there's something else that Leslie also has in common, or at least her father, and I thought you could talk just briefly to let everybody know a little bit about your roots, and then we'll get right into you and your roots. Tell them just a little bit about your claim to fame with, I guess, your father. Tell them a little
bit. Yeah. Well, these are my roots, but...
Want to see mine? Yeah, they're not real.
Need a touch up. Well, I essentially come from a show business family. Everybody is a performer, technician, or writer, or what have you. My late father, who was known as Whitey Mitchell and then later as Gordon Mitchell, began as a very famous jazz musician and bass player. In fact, if you ever have heard the tune Stand By Me,
yeah,
he's the bass player that plays the intro. Da, da, ba, ba, ba. That's my dad. Cool. So, and my uncle Red Mitchell is one of the finest jazz players who ever lived. They're both gone now. But anyway, my dad decided when he was, in his early 30s that he wanted to write for television. So he wrapped us up and my skinny mother and drove to Los Angeles. And within about 3 months, and this is sort of unheard of now, but within about 3 months, he sold his first script to Get Smart and later went on to, work in tandem with those guys. I think he invented the Cone of Silence and some of the other funny gizmos that they had. So Whitey went on to write for the next 20 years for the creme de la creme of sitcoms. He worked with Norman Lear. He wrote and produced All in the Family. He wrote and produced The Jeffersons, Good Times. He wrote for Mary Tyler Moore, had an Emmy for Mary Tyler Moore, I believe. Some of his other shows that you may remember, he wrote a number of MASH, and he created Mork and Mindy for Robin Williams. And you'll see him, all those shows are on these classic subscription channels like TV Land. So that was a very exciting time. And he certainly produced some really amazing thing. My favorite one, I would think I was just mentioning to you before we went on the air, is in All in the Family.
Oh yeah.
They touched on some incredible subjects, which now were too politically correct to touch upon.
Right.
So he wrote a script about Archie getting religion. And everything that came, all the absurdity that came out of Archie's mouth was actually taken from my late grandfather, who was a racist and a nincompoop and an idiot and a born again, what have you.
Yeah.
So all of that came from real. In fact, our real life slipped in there more than you would think.
I think that that is absolutely remarkable. Were you alive when he was doing all this writing?
Oh God, yes. In fact, as a young actor in Los Angeles, there were a couple times where I made appearances on shows that he wrote, but there was no nepotism in my dad didn't believe in it. So it was ironic that I had, some little parts when I was a young actor in shows that he had actually written. But yes, so I was, really, when he had first arrived, I was a young teenager. So I went through the whole thing. And then, of course, there was my Minneapolis period. So,
yeah, no, this is. And then, yeah, so let's talk a little bit about. So today, what's real interesting with Leslie today is we're going to talk a little bit about her, I don't know if you want to call it your hypnotic regression therapies, particularly with those people who believe that they've been abducted. Mm-hmm. But Leslie, before we get to that and some of these questions that I have, I want you to go back a little bit because, you come from, this is something that would spark those that would be curious about what I call prodigies, those mm-hmm. individuals so gifted and so talented that they make their mark so much. And people would begin to wonder where this connection could potentially have evolved or come from. But when you started noticing or becoming interested in some of this work that you do now, where did this start for you?
Well, I have always been interested in psychology, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. And particularly, the more esoteric forms of psychology. And even as a, you know, when I was studying theater arts in university, I was, it was always a push me, pull you between those two areas. And in fact, I worked in a, I put myself through school. I, even though my dad was a millionaire, he withheld monies, and I put myself through college by working in a state mental hospital as a psychiatric aide. So I saw and experienced some incredible things there that would certainly, many of them would fall into the metaphysical realm. In fact, there was a show called Haunted Hospitals that's on the air where I did a segment of that and talked about the Yankton State Hospital where I worked and had many rather terrifying experiences. But my beginning of interest in, I should say, ufology happened quite early. And it began with my father having a telescope and going out in the backyard and watching the stars. But when I was a young university student, I had a job as an apprentice actor at a wonderful summer theater that is in South Dakota, in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And it's called the Black Hills Playhouse. It's still there. The professional quality, wonderful show, summer theater. So I was working there at the Black Hills Playhouse, and one of my friends in the company was a gal that she seemed fantastically sophisticated and older to me, and I'm thinking maybe she was 30.
Yeah, I know.
Fantastic. So knows everything. So this was my friend, and what am I gonna? I'm just gonna call her Susie.
Yeah,
give her a little fake name. Yeah. So we spent a lot of time together that summer, and in fact, you know, every time that we wanted to go into town, which was Custer, you know, we had to go through a, you know, circuitous mountain drive to Custer. So I started noticing pretty quickly on that every time I got in the car with her at night, we were being followed by lights of a nondescript nature, but they were absolutely, and there were no roads there. In fact, it's even, you know, that is sacred Native American land, so there's a no-fly zone. There's not even air traffic there, really. So eventually, you know, there was one experience where we were coming back, and I saw what I can only describe as a very typical sort of cylindrical craft, and it was close enough for me to even see what you might call portholes.
And
I was, of course, mesmerized, and then I thought, well, maybe I'm the only one seeing this, because I have a little bit of what they call the shining, so I have often seen things that other people can't necessarily see. So I really wasn't sure. And so my friend Susie said, oh, okay, well, you saw that, didn't you? I said, yes. And I asked for an explanation, and she told me that, you know, she had a life and worked in the resort area when she was, she normally had a life living in Nevada, and she worked in the casino. She was a singer. Mm-hmm. And she said she also worked for the government in a program of nonverbal communication. In other words, every day or whatever it was, you know, she'd go to a plane wrap airport somewhere outside of Las Vegas, get in a plane wrap airplane, and was taken away with other folks to one of the areas out there. I mean, Area 51 is only one of them. I think it was the Dreamland base, maybe, where she went. But anyway, it was a base with a lot of underground facilities. And they would be in a room, and they would be communicating with, at this time, a very specific type of ET, which I will call the Zeta Reticulites. They've been involved with us forever. Those are the beings also that took Betty and Barney Hill and have been responsible for most of the, what I would call, abductions, which means a negative experience to me. So they were in the business of communicating. Now, she, I think that it was exhausting. It was exhausting, but also the ETs, I'm not sure that they, that many of them understand sleep as we have it. And they would bother her with, I suppose, invasive. She probably even heard them in her head. I'm not really sure. I didn't ask the right questions at that time. But it became too much for her. And she had she was planning to hide out like Patty Hearst at the Black Hills Playhouse, right? Mm-hmm. But it didn't matter where she went. We now know, of course, every human brain emits a specific vibratory signal, which is unique and specific to that brain. So you don't need tracking dots. All this nonsense about implants being tracking dots is all nonsense. They've never needed that. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, I should say. So later on during that summer, and I'm going to say there were about 300 people in the company and crew. And for that on that afternoon, for some reason, there was absolutely nobody like in the main area. Mm-hmm. And I was just hanging out doing nothing at the snack bar, which I was particularly good at. So I was there hanging out doing nothing. And I see this car speed. I mean, they were speeding, you know, speed into this big turnaround, you know, that's in front of the theater and drive. And it didn't quite have wings, but it was definitely a late model American, you know, Men in Black type car. It really was. So this unusual car that was maybe 10 years older than anything we would normally see drove around, and they pulled up right in front of Susie's dorm area, the entrance to her room. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, that is out. I wonder what's going on there. So still, nobody else is around. And I see getting out of this vehicle two, I'm going to call them beings, mm-hmm. But their skin, they obviously had some sort of disguise. Their skin looked like plastic. Mm-hmm. That's the best way I can probably describe it. Their skin looked like plastic, and they were wearing classic 1940s gangster suits, like George Raft, right. For God's sake. You know what I'm talking about. Wow, stick them up, you know, like that. Yeah. So, and fedoras. So I couldn't see what their head or hair arrangement was, or if they even had any. So the one specific thing that I found amusing, though, is that their pants were like what I would call high waters. Mm. They were up really high, and they were wearing what could only be described as like orthopedic shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I now wonder if they were weighted orthopedic shoes or something that made them eat it easier for them. I don't know. Anyway, so I saw them go in there, and I thought, you know, oh my God, I can't let this go on. I have to do something. And I said, well, you know, in 2 minutes I'm going to bust in. And like, what was I going to do? You know, wave my tuna sandwich at them. I mean, yeah. I had no plan. I was 16 years old. Uh-huh. So I was just about to go make a big show business entrance, and they came out rapidly, got in the big old fashioned car, and sped out again. So I immediately went over there and I said, oh my God, what was that? Who were they? And she said, well, they were obviously involved. They were ETs. They were involved with the government, and they were trying to influence me to come back and continue to work with them. And I continued to refuse. So, interestingly enough, I should probably do a more thorough kind of looking for her, because we did lose touch. She only did that one season at the Playhouse, where I did another two, I think. So it was only in that time that those phenomena occurred. They were directly attached to her and her job. Now, I have since read many reports. I've since read many reports that these type of programs were incredibly funded and possible and probable. I mean, even Ingo Swann was drafted to do what was nascently called remote viewing. Mm-hmm. So they were, and God knows the Russians were probably doing it like crazy. They were probably light years ahead of us with that. Oh, yeah. But at any rate, this is a real thing that happened. Now, how it was discovered that she was psychic and could do this, what her journey had been to that point, I do not know. But I would have to suspect that somehow she was on the radar.
Mm-hmm. Which brings in a good question right here. And for those of us that understand what I'm going to say right now, maybe Leslie can help shed some light on it. So I refer to myself as a neurodivergent beacon. A lighthouse with a shining globe at the top of my head. But I attribute a lot of my abilities, which I have had several, a lot actually, including what I believe are extraterrestrial visitations, but nothing harmful, more healing and miraculous in nature. And so, you know, I've been on my own journey for a long time to try to figure myself out. And my life has exploded to a level where I can't turn anything off, including my either the visitations or whatever. But you brought something up earlier that people ask me about all the time, and I don't have a good answer. So we have our pineal gland, right? And there's theories out there, theories about calcification or minerals or deposits or whatever that's settling up there. And that's attributed to why we have this extra frequency that goes like that. Others, like myself, I've had trauma since a very young age. Different forms of trauma, you know, subtle to very intense to everything. And it's all kind of accumulated over time. So then there's the theory of, well, what's happened here is, what is it, fright or flight or whatever, has rewired something up in your brain, because once you go through something like that or trauma, then something is happening. Okay, so you did bring up something earlier regarding how everybody has a different way of emitting something in their brains, but how is that established? Are we born with it? Do we acquire it? Do we have experiences that create it? Where exactly, why are some of us, I am the most in my family, the most unusual. I have to say that. Everyone's unique, but I'm talking in terms of my experiences. Where everyone else has gone off like that, I've gone off like that. And so, you know, where does this come from? I don't know. Do you have an explanation for that?
Well, the first thing I'm going to say, and this is with regard to ET contact. And what I've been doing this kind of work for about 20 years. And I was also part of Kathleen Martin's experience or research program that she did through MUFON, and also Ray Hernandez, the free organization. I've been through these research, through several of these research programs. And so I've had a lot of people sent to me. I think the great commonality in beings in whom ETs are interested are those of us that come into this physical life with enhanced psychic ability. I think we all have it to some extent, but it's like people who are brilliant musicians or incredible writers. You know, there are different levels of innate skill that come into being. And I think for the most part, this is a talent that can pass through familial lines,
right,
which may be one reason why we see that in the ET experience. You know, grandparents who didn't talk about it, but sometimes one of grandparents, parents, a brother, a sister, siblings are often taken together. So this is something we see. Now, aside from that genetic predisposition, if you will, there are, I think, also triggering events which can somehow loosen up that ability. And we know that people who have had near-death experiences or technically died and come back, invariably they have increased psychic abilities. And so there are And I suspect that there are other psychophysical traumas that can, in fact, somehow unleash those kinds of abilities. Now, as far as the pineal gland, I think it's a bad idea to visualize it as crusty, you know, with and but they would like us to do that, to think that our pineal glands are shriveled up and useless. That is not the case, especially if you practice any kind of spiritual discipline. And I mean anything. If you're a Muslim and you pray five times a day, if you're a devout Catholic and you say the rosary, those are meditations. Mm-hmm. And you know, they are meant as a connection to our divine nature. Mm-hmm. In a simplistic way of putting it. But that binds us all. People who have those disciplines, their pineal glands are nice and juicy, right? And also, I mean, there have been some early autopsies going way back in time, where the brains prophets have been looked at. And they have also examined, I think, the brains of some gurus and other, you know, enlightened Buddhist priests, what have you. And the pineal gland can be as big as a lemon in some of these people. So maybe size and output of the pineal gland is also genetic. Huh. But you can certainly do exercises and spiritual disciplines and things like Kundalini yoga that are designed to turn it on. You can certainly get it healthier. Mm-hmm. So I would challenge everybody out there not to think of their pineal gland, which in most people is about the size of a grain of rice. It's between the two hemispheres of the brain, but to think of it as a plump, juicy grape. Mm-hmm. And just envision that. Mm-hmm. And you will begin to manifest it. Mm-hmm. And you will begin to have deeper meditations and produce more DMT and have more interdimensional experiences. Mm-hmm. Because that is the gateway. That's the upper room. So a lot of what we are discovering, Kelly, through all of this research, is that much of this experience is in the realm of the ultra-dimensional.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
But I would think it was not I venture to say that almost everyone that has a contact experience has strong PSI abilities.
Yeah.
And there you go. Now, most of the time, these experiences are benign and even euphoric, because the main problems and this idea of, you know, the probes and the pain and all that, this comes from the post Roswell era and under what we now call the Truman Agreement, and that's something we can talk about later. But it primarily involved the Zeta Reticulites, who could no longer reproduce, and they wanted to access our DNA to help stimulate whatever their situation was, and they were given permission to do so by Harry S. Truman, and later it was continued by Eisenhower, and there would be an exchange of tech, and they gave us tech we could handle, but really sophisticated, you know, fiber optics, Velcro.
Yeah, Velcro. Love Velcro. You know,
They gave us a lot of technologies, and they were all housed under the Department of Foreign Technologies in the Army, and it was foreign, all right. And I have no doubt that many of the individuals that worked on reverse engineering this tech that we were given probably thought it came from Russia, you know, because we were in the Cold War. At that time, mm-hmm. post World War II, beginning of the Cold War, the 50s, the nuclear—you know—all of this kind of stuff. So, if I work with someone or encounter someone now that has had a brutal Zeta Reticulite experience, where, you know, ovum or sperm has been taken, or any of these other kinds of things, or they would usually have to be at least my age, and I'm 68. Mm-hmm. So it's something that we don't see a whole lot of. I'm not saying that it didn't happen. And I'm also not saying that there cannot be isolated, horrendous experiences with beings that we're not as familiar with. Right. That I never discount anything. But what I am saying is the vast majority, and I think with Kathy's research, it was up to 80% of all experiences are either benign or euphoric or positive.
I hear a lot of stories from my the guests that have been abducted or proclaimed to, and those that have had implants put inside mm-hmm. of them, which I have a few that have implants inside of them. They don't hurt or anything. They think that it's their way of being revisited, but it's interesting that you bring that. Yeah.
I think in the information that I have heard, and I'm just going to tell you what I've heard and then let everyone in your listening audience decide if it resonates for them. But what I have heard is that the implants primarily are kind of like step-up transformers. Mm-hmm. They, wherever they are, the objective is that communication will be easier, nonverbal communication will be easier, because most of the elevated beings that we deal with do not have to speak physically. Many of them can and do, but they are primarily telepathic beings, and we're on the path. You know, we can do it. I think the internet is a bit like training wheels, mm-hmm. that maybe this level of technology is something that many civilizations have had to pass through mm-hmm. to survive nuclear destruction and move into a timeline of a connected world, because that really is what we are having from the internet. There are negative things, of course, but our children and our children's children are able to access information from anywhere. Mm-hmm. And they don't, unless they're taught prejudice or racism, they don't have any.
Right. Yeah.
They do.
Right.
So, you know, I think that's, I think that that is actually what, you know, is pretty much going on. Now, the implants themselves can be made of organic material, so it's hard to really determine, you know, they don't necessarily respond to x-rays. Now, Dr. Lear, who's gone, God bless him, he was the doctor who did probably the most investigative work with implants as far as removal. And he found that that some of them would disintegrate upon reaching the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Some of them would run, sort of, you know, he would have a hard time getting it out. And the ones he was able to test all were exuding what he called a radio signal.
Yes.
But some type of vibrational information was coming off of them. So now there are also, from the clients that I have been blessed to work with, I have also been told that there are implants that are in our etheric body, you know, not necessarily in the physical body. So you can be walking around with a fairly sophisticated implant that's helping, but it's only in our, I call it the psychophysical body or the etheric body, not, you know, our light bodies. Maybe that's a better way to put it. So the idea of help to become more gifted, to speed us up a little bit. You know, there's an awful lot of speculation that in our creation and our evolution, which involved, you know, I believe a lot of alien DNA from different planets. I mean, I think that we are the hybrids, right? But certainly there's enough translated material to believe that the Anunnaki purposefully truncated our psychic abilities so we would not be threatened.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not working, because we can turn in our own bodies, we can turn things on just by adhering to simple spiritual disciplines. So there you have it. Now, I just want to say a word about the mantis beings, because contrary to what you might think or your listeners might think, the mantis beings are extremely loving, generally mm-hmm. speaking, and they are known as the DNA specialists of our corner of the galaxy. And they often interact with children, but they will always disguise themselves because they're obsessed with not upsetting us, mm-hmm. because they understand, as mammalians, how violently we react to beings that come either out of a reptilian or insectoid line of development. We really have trouble with that. And so they go to great pains either not to be seen and or to disguise themselves. Now also, they're very good with what I would have to call holographic technology, for lack of a better term. There are many races of beings that have decided long ago it's a big hassle to travel in space, you know, to go through the vortex or whatever you got to do, big hassle. So they have learned how to project themselves three-dimensionally mm-hmm. without tech. Mm-hmm. You know, they are able to do it. And the insectoids are very fond of that. Mm-hmm. They're able to pop in and pop out. So, you know, your experience that you had, when you're talking about the elongated fingers, I think there's an important thing to remember, that there are many collaborations going on and there are many types of grays, mm-hmm. most of them benevolent. Mm-hmm. There are also, I believe, grays that are not completely physical. Mm-hmm. They are biological space traveling entities that work more like servants. They're always assisting when humans are transported places. They open the vortices. Some of them have a kind of wand. They're able to do it. And so you might have an experience where grays come into your room and levitate you through the window. And when you get to the craft, you're talking to a bunch of beautiful blonde-haired humanoids. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of collaboration. Travis Walton talked about that in his great experience, mm-hmm. because there were definitely humanoids running the show. So, you know, we have to not project hate or judgment on any particular race or variety, because it's a very complex mm-hmm. issue. Creativity, the universe, God's creation, if I may put a corny epithet on that, it's extremely complex. Mm-hmm. And but there you go.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting is, so, you know, I begged for about a year and a half to figure out who put the handprint on me, right? I've got a picture of this I was just filmed just a few weeks ago in North Carolina regarding my experience with that handprint. And so what happened was, here, I'm going to give you a few extra details here. So I know whatever it was, sometimes I question, it's that finger that bugs me more than anything, because in a way, it looks almost like a gray's finger. This is where it gets confusing. So I had been begging the universe, talking to psychics, who put that thing on me? When I had it on me, it was, it didn't hurt. It was upside down, you know, it was blood red, purplish, scared me to death. The night before I went to bed, probably around 2 a.m., I laid down probably within 10 minutes, this ungodly rose watery, putrid, smelly, stinky, though more stinky than the rose water thing, but more putrid smell came over me. Didn't see anything, didn't hear anything. Believe my head where I lay is just by a place in my bedroom, which I believe has a portal. Mm-hmm. And I pulled the covers over my face. And I thought to myself, I got to talk to my husband about this. His shampoo is just wretched. And it's just like, what is that smell? So anyway, I went to sleep, apparently. And that's the next day when I woke up, I discovered this in the mirror. Okay, so it lasted 3 hours. It didn't just fade. It just disappeared after 3 hours. I have pictures of all of this. But when I was looking at the fingers on it and everything, there is that one that is a very, that I couldn't tell if it was mantis or gray. But the thing is when I had my dream, what you just mentioned something very important, or you hit on something. So when I had my dream, I was just dreaming of my husband's cousin's child probably around 20 some years old. Literally, I saw this in my dream, walking away from me. And I was just watching her in my dream, walking away. Then she stopped and then she turned around, kind of in a very slow fashion. And that's when I saw the huge eyes, the COVID mask, hair was pulled back, kind of like a human, a mantis being slash humanoid. Didn't necessarily look like a gray, but it was like when I saw that image, I freaked out. I did. I woke up. I was completely just in a pool of sweat. I couldn't believe it. My heart was beating out of my chest so hard. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. And I screamed out, don't ever do that to me again. That scared me. I don't know what you are, who you are, and all that, but don't ever do that. But I had been begging, please show me.
Well, there you go. You know, you got your thing answered, and you weren't quite ready.
I wasn't ready for that.
What the being was. But they will. We can use non-physical communication with the beings all the time. In fact, you know, many of the experiencers who come to see me have, I would have to say, very close, regular relationships with certain beings. And now it's, I suppose, I lead them into a place where it's almost like channeling. Mm-hmm. I can ask questions in real time of the being and of their being, and my client in the seat will be able to tell me the answers.
Yeah, so, I'd love to sit with you at some point. I hope to. I am very telepathic. Mm-hmm. And when I go into a casino, my husband's the only one who can attest to this. I suppose a couple siblings too. All I do is I ask the question, bring me to the winning machine. Just bring me. And then I go into some kind of a unusual, but I'm being guided. Now, people might say, oh, that's your inner intuition, or that's just your luck of the day. How can it be my luck of the day when I win IRS jackpots practically every single time that I sit down at my first machine and I'm being guided and told, sit down right here? Mm-hmm. Now, I am telepathic, but I'm not quite sure how I'm getting to that point, which again, I hope to meet you in person someday, maybe have a regression and maybe help to figure this out as to how I'm able to do some of this stuff. But I am I became telepathic though at a younger age that I didn't realize I was telepathic until I photographed something in a screen window. And they talked to me the next day when I went back after I discovered these images. Mm-hmm. And they told me what the issue was. And then once I realized what the issue was, now, is that a spirit guide? Is that a higher power? Is that something more extraterrestrial? I do not know. All I know is that I'm telepathic. So I have a question for you.
I was just going to answer that one. I think all of those things could be true. I believe that we have guides, and especially when we're in this kind of work, you know, sometimes I'm talking more as a hypnotherapist, I'm talking about maybe dealing with, you know, a trauma or child abuse or something, you know, and I open myself up and I collaborate with another healer who's non-physical. Mm-hmm. So these things are all true that you mentioned. I think you were born the way you were born. And when adolescence starts, certain things turn on more prominently and some things turn off. So it's a journey. But yeah. I believe that those of us that do this kind of work, we have agreements that we made before we entered physical life. This is the cruel school. Mm-hmm. This is the corner of the universe that is unique in that I think to have a planet that has been populated with so many different streams of DNA is unusual. Mm-hmm. And I think that it is it's often referred to as the grand experiment. Mm-hmm. So take that for what you will, but this is where people need help. This is where they are blocked. They've forgotten who they are. We have global amnesia. Yep. We have forgotten the great societies that were here that came before. Now, all of that is starting to turn around. I mean, my God, ancient archaeology has been on the air for almost 20 years now, purporting always, you know, the intervention of evolved beings. We are also having many whistleblowers come forward who have worked in some collaborative capacity with the secret space program of the Black Ops, if you will, which I must tell you is a real thing. We created the secret space program from the very beginning by suppressing what actually happened in Roswell and the Truman Agreement that I was mentioning. It was begun years ago, an unlimited budget. How many trillion did they say is missing that they've discovered now? Wow. I can't even, 93 trillion, I can't even conceive of that number, but we had an unsupervised, unelected, space program, which has operated on the down low using all kinds of sophisticated technology for many, many years and drafting in cadets. Yeah. And there we have the 20 and back, which is something else we can talk about another time.
So people talk about, you brought it up kind of in the beginning with this gal that you were mm-hmm. friends with, and she was part of this program or whatever. And this Truman Agreement. Okay, mm-hmm. here's the question. People kind of want to know, including myself. Okay, so it sounds to me like there was some E.T. situation there or agreement with Truman or whomever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The question that people want to know is, did the ET talk in regular language, telepathically, physically? How on earth, who on earth were they actually communicating with and having these agreements with? Were they in the physical being, the telepathic being? Where did this all come from?
From what I understand, and a very good book to read if you're interested in this particular time in history is Colonel Philip Corso's book called The Day After Roswell. And that gets into a lot of the particulars that you might be interested in. But these were physical beings, not a whole lot more evolved than we are, really. And they had had a devastating Zeta Reticula is a binary system. So there were two planets that were warring with each other. It was horrendous, and huge loss of life for them, etc., etc. So they were physical. Now, I have heard a few different things about the communication. Well, of course, thing one is he just passed away recently, but there was a marvelous gentleman, and it was his job specifically to communicate with one of the ETs that survived the Roswell crash.
Okay.
So that was completely telepathic. But as I understand, they later, through collaboration with that species, developed a linguistic approach.
Okay.
And were able to sort of decode there was also a language and a spoken language. And also, if you happen to have ever read, here's another book that'll blow your socks off. Len Kasten's book, The Secret Journey to Planet Serpo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that talks about a time period that is loosely pictorialized in Steven Spielberg's film.
Is that one called?
Close Encounters.
Yes.
Yeah. So we did, in fact, send a crew of 9 or 12 people, some men, some women, over to, under a guided mission, over to the planet Serpo. The Serpens are what they're called, planet Serpo, which they were not the Zeta Reticulites, but very much more like Bashar, more humanoid looking, but definitely tiny and the round heads and very minimal hair. So these were the Serpens, very beautiful people. I mean, beautiful in the sense of beautiful souls.
Right.
And there was an exchange mission
mm-hmm.
where we had a group that went there and they sent a group to us. Now, of that original group that went, there were very few survivors for various reasons. Nothing There was no violence, nothing like that happened. But to get the deets, you should really read that book by Len Kasten with a K, The Secret Journey to Planet Serpo. And it describes a, you know, sort of Cold War era thing that we did, that the that was what part of our black ops. There was a landing, not unlike what is portrayed in Close Encounters. It didn't happen at the Devil's Tower in Wyoming, but it happened in another remote place. So some of these things, you might even think that they were being purposefully leaked in a way so that we can prepare ourselves for disclosure, because disclosure is coming.
Yeah,
it's a grassroots movement. We can no longer depend on any of the governments to reveal anything truthful, in my opinion, but it's still happening. Mm-hmm. It's happening. It's happening every day.
Mm-hmm. So, have you had experiences with, and while I ask this question, I'm going to look at a couple of the other ones that I have on a list for you. Have you ever had experiences with, oh, by the way, I was in Custer Park, and I did have something in our cabin, which, by the way, I can attest to as being something outer, interesting. So there is something about that area, but a lot of areas that
there is.
Yeah,
and the Native Americans, the Lakota people, have had open contact with the star beings since the dawn of time.
Yeah, and really? they were in my cabin, and yeah. I was telling my husband, I said, this is normal for me. I tracked everything around the area, if it wasn't whatever. Have you ever had or done a CE5 experience before? Have you ever done that?
I would adore to do that. I've done some things that are CE5-like. But I have not had a chance to go to, you know, Arizona and do the, or is it Arizona where he is? And do the Stephen Greer thing. Oh. Now, there are other people that I know, and I know someone who was very closely affiliated with Stephen Greer and knows the whole deal. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopefully going to do that this summer. Mm-hmm. And I know that there is a tool that you can, it's called the tool, the contact tool. You can download it for free and from Stephen Greer's organization. And it goes through the modalities that they use. There's some Vedic chanting involved, and other tones and things. So there's no harm in reaching out with love and openness, because Stephen Greer has only attracted benevolent beings.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put that out there, that's what's going to come to you. It's harder to manifest in the third density.
Yeah,
truly it is, because in what we call heaven, everyone can manifest with the speed of thought.
Yeah,
and it's all made out of light matter, and everything is real. Yeah. So, but here, you know, we have to work a little harder because it's the cruel school. But we can do it. We absolutely can manifest. Yeah. Creation, positive creation, is like a big river that flows through all matter, all life. And there are some people that will only take a little tiny teaspoon. Yeah. It's too much for me, you know, and they have those kinds of narrow lives. And then there are people who get out there with a big beer stein and just take a big slug of it and enjoy it. And that's how we can all be.
Mm-hmm.
And you were asking me one thing you were asking me about how do I get the information from, you know, whatever I'm doing. You have the ability, we all have the ability, to tap into the Akashic Records, to tap into the field of knowledge. It's just there. And if you need specific information about something, all you have to do is send your consciousness there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds like, oh God, that's so hard. It's just thought. It's thought. Mm-hmm. Thoughts are things.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts are things.
Me to another question here. From some of the guests that I've interviewed, so and just for what you just to go back earlier for a couple things that you've said with these implants, I do know of one that has one the size of a rice, and I know you know this person, Lala Bright. And then I'm sure you probably And then I know another woman who is very, very talented. She's actually a treasure hunter, and she's very gifted. But they discovered in her, when she had some lung issues, so they went in to do surgery, and they discovered, you know, something that kind of looked like a little mercury ball. And every time they tried to grab it, it kept running away. And they could never grab it, and they couldn't. And then there's cases where they might x-ray and they see it. I saw this case once of a child who had something the size of a BB in his jaw. Then they went in to try to get it, and it just disappeared. And then it reappear and disappear. And so, you know, when people ask me, well, do you think, they ask me, do you think you have an implant? My answer is, I really don't know, but you brought up another thing I never thought of before, that, what did you call it, the etheric?
In the etheric body, there are implants.
Yeah,
we can be stimulated spiritually and psychically, not just in our physical body, but in the real part of us.
Interesting.
And that's the part that we often travel with. And as experiencers become older and more mature and more experienced, they tend to have less physical experiences and more profound experiences.
Yeah.
Using astral projection, for lack of a better term, we are able to bilocate. Most experiencers are able to bilocate, which again, I think is part of the skill set that they're looking for.
What have you found regarding individuals or clients that have come to you that either are a hybrid or think that they've met their hybrid children?
Well, the meeting of the children is a big commonality. Especially if we're talking about experiencers who have had their sperm or their ova, you know, extracted for this particular reason. Now, as you say, I think in the early stages of the hybrid program, the children were less human in the sense of their emotional selves. They probably can't survive outside the craft. But as they have gone along, they have really been able to create hybridized beings who can live here on Earth seamlessly. So it again depends on the proportion of activated DNA. But, you know, we are the hybrids. As I said, we've already got all kinds of DNA running around inside of us. You know, and again, a kind of, before we sign off, I know it's almost time for me to go, but a high disproportionate amount of people who are experiencers have O negative blood type, myself included.
Oh, you do? You have O negative?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And it just comes out of nowhere. No one in my family has. It just came literally out of nowhere, which just means it could have come from my grandmother, you know, earlier. But yes, it seems to be that the oldest blood group, they know, they can tell when blood groups came into being, and the oldest blood group that they know of is O and negative for rhesus. There simply is no other being on the earth that can be allergic in a blood conflict with their own child. You know, and that's what we're kind of set up for, unless we take care of it medically. But that in itself is highly unusual, that I could be carrying a blood type that under the right circumstances would reject my own child.
Oh my.
So it's a complicated matter, and we just scratched the surface, but
tell everybody how they can reach out to you.
Alrighty.
Find your book and the whole 10 yards.
Okay. Well, you can always reach me through my website. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-E-Y. That's the female spelling. Don't misgender me now. Okay. Leslie at lightworkhypnosis.com. That's all one word. That's my little company. And the website itself is just www.lightworkhypnosis.com. Now, you can order my most recent book through Amazon anywhere. And it's called, It's called Intersections, A True Story of Extraterrestrial Contact. And I had the chance to work with one experiencer like 40 times. So there's tons of information there, things that you will never read about how hypnosis works. It's a really informative book. There's that. And for about 12 years, I've had my own little chat show. We've welcomed a total who's who of people in ufology and other disciplines. And that's called Contact TV. And we have our own YouTube channel. So just go to YouTube, make a forward flash, a slash rather, and it's Contact TV.
Well, definitely have to have you back in the future, Leslie. My God, we just barely scratched the surface.
Thank you, my dear.
Good teaser just to get started. And on behalf of the show and myself and everybody, thank you so much for being on us with us today.
Thank you. Dr. Kelly, thank you. And I look forward to chatting the next time around.